Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 42.
Well, we went from there, from Dover, to Chatham. And when we got there, we was taken there, or how many was taken, I don't know. But where I was taken, there was quite a large crowd, and all stretcher cases, we went to a large hall. What sort of hall it was, I don't know. It might have been a large church hall, but it held all perhaps 40, 50 beds, perhaps more, all round this large hall, and that's where we was taken to. Well, now, in the next bed to me, I'm telling the tale now, wandering, but don't matter. The next bed to me was a Scotchman. Now, he came from one of the islands right in the north of Scotland. He couldn't read, he couldn't write. So he asked me if I'd write a letter for him to his parents, and I did do. Now, in the bed next to me, the other side, was a right royal turn. He was a chap in the Hampshire Regiment, and he came from Plymouth. Now, him and I, we got pally, and we kept together right through the hospital treatment, which I'll tell you about a bit later. Now, you can tell what sort of a lad he was. Oh no, wait a minute. While I was there, me mother and father, two brothers, they came to see me there, so we was there several days. But this chap next to me, I remember one day his mother came to see him from Plymouth. He was a single chap, and we was right at the far end of this room, and his mother came in at the other end of the room, looked round and spotted him, and she came running down the room and bawling and calling, running up to him, and she'd got a, always remember it, because women used to wear hats in those days, but you never see anything like it, what she'd got. She'd got a big hat on, there was feathers and flowers, a proper big posh hat. And this, she always used to call him Mush. He looked at his mother, he said, before she could say anything, she was bald, and he said, where'd you get that bloody hat from? And that's the sort of reception she got. But it was very laughable. Now then, after a few days, we got moved from there to a hospital. I told you before, the VAD hospital was always the best. While the casualties was coming in about that time, very, very fast, shiploads of them. Well, now, there was just a small batch of us. I don't know how many come there, for sure, but perhaps a dozen. We went to a house at Strood. That's near, it's that way, no, Rochester, close to Rochester, Strood, that was it. And it was a large doctor's private house. There was about a dozen of us there, wounded. The doctor was there, a sister, and some VAD nurses, and they looked after us well there. Well, now, after a day, soon as we got there, because they sorted us out what was wrong, and then we had operations there. Well, when it came to the operation, you've heard talk of dum-dum bullets. Well, they were supposed to be, they was illegal and not supposed to be used at all. Well, now, one of those bullets, when it hit you, it scattered. In other words, the casing came off. Now, an ordinary bullet with a point to it would go straight through you, or cut a bone in half and go straight through. But in my case, what actually happened, after the operation, they cut my leg open, and they found pieces of a bullet, which was either a dum-dum bullet, or it was an ordinary bullet that had hit the wire and split it up, because why I'm so sure they gave me some of it, which a casing of a bullet, of course, is copper casing. Well, now, the pieces they took out was all curled up, and one of the bits I've got now at home to prove it, and another piece me mother had and made a brooch of it, a curl, all curly, jagged. And the x-ray proved, the doctor told me afterwards, of course, said we couldn't get it all out because there's still a piece stuck in the bone, the back of your shin bone, and as far as I know, it's still there now. Well, after the operation, a few days later, instead of it going as it should do, healed up, it all swole up, my leg swole, it was me below the knee, my leg all swole up and went black, and the nurse and the sister and doctor decided, this was at night, decided that the next day they'd have to have my leg off. Well, during the night, that all burst and broke open. You never saw such a mess. It smothered everything. It burst and cleared it all out. And that I've never had trouble with it since. The way they put you to sleep then was vastly different to what it is today. I simply laid you on the table, for operating table. Someone came behind and slapped a pad on your face, which was half ether and half chloroform. And do you know, that was an awful feeling. It made you feel as though they were trying to suffocate you. And it was awful feeling before you went off. Well, when you came round after the operation, you was as sick as a dog and felt awful bad. And you could taste that for days afterwards. As we began to get better, there was four of us in a downstairs front room. And as the people went to work in the morning, the girls went to work in the factories nearby, they used to come to our window and shout at us and have a chat and often leave some cigarettes for us. Well, now, there was the doctor there. Well, I got a faint idea he must have been the local doctor, pre-war days. And there was the sister and two VAD nurses, and they looked after us marvellous. Well, now, as we got better, because we had crutches and learned to use crutches, well, now, that old mate of mine that I told you that we got pally with, the Plymouth chap, well, he'd got a bad wound in his foot, and there was half of his shoe blew away. Well, he hung on to that shoe. Well, now, what used to happen very often was some of the local people would come round with a car and take one or two of you out for a day. Well, now, anyone with a car then must have been very, very wealthy, because very few cars was about in that time. Well, I'd perhaps pick a couple of you up, take you out for a day and give you a good day's outing. Well, now, on one occasion, I remember that the local fire brigade took the whole lot of us from that hospital. Well, I told you it was a hospital because it was a private doctor's house. And the fire brigade came, collected us up, and took us to the local music hall. And because it was all organised previously, and they put us in a row right at the front. Now, on the stage that particular night was a well-known lady comedian, which you often hear of even today. That was Mary Lloyd, the well-known comedian of those days. And after the performance, she collected us little bunch up, took us round the back of the stage and gave us all a drink, so we really enjoyed that evening. Well, we stayed on there until we began to get fit again, so that we could walk without having crutches, and then we had to go before a medical board to see if we was fit to leave hospital, which we did. Well, this chap was our pally with. We went together. We went to London from hospital, and he always carried, he would carry that old pair of boots of his. He had them slung over his shoulder because he said he was never going to get rid of them because half of it was blew away. And I remember when we got to London, we went in, we had a few drinks, and those in the bar asked what he's doing with those boots hanging on his shoulder. So, of course, him being an old hand, he told the tale, and we didn't want for drinks at all anymore that dinner time when we got there in that pub. But now, from there, I went home for leave, hospital leave. Now, at that time, even then, there was no conscription. You fancy, all that time the war carried on and not even conscription was brought in. Well, anyone in civilian clothes then, a youngest chap, these girls, wherever you were, had an habit of giving you a white feather. Now, it happened like this. While I was home on leave, I got into me civvy clothes, and I said to me mother, there was a play going on at Northampton. That was the old repertory theatre at Northampton, and they was putting a play on then, and that was the Bing Boys, which you often hear sung today, the Bing Boys. So I said to my mother, I'll take you down and take you and see this play. Well, when we went up Gold Street, those that know in Northampton, Gold Street, we got to the top of Gold Street by the church there. What the hell is it now? I forget. The church at the top of Gold Street. And just as we got to the corner, there was a bunch of girls stood there, and mother and myself was walking the other side of the road. One of these girls came straight across from where they were, this bunch, and put a white feather in me jacket. And I never said anything because I'd done a grin to myself. I knew what it meant. But me mother, oh dear, didn't she fly in a temper? She told these girls what was happened, of course. That not only was I in the army, but I was home wounded. Well, now, anyone home wounded early in the war, well, you can see they were sort of two a penny heroes, as the saying is. And oh golly, those girls, didn't they make a fuss and apologise? They said they were sorry, they didn't know, and they made a terrible fuss. But my poor old mum, oh, she was angry. It took her a long time to get over that. Well, as you can imagine, it was great to be back home again from the trenches. But it was not quite what you might expect, because when I came back here at that time, well, Wolverton Bradwell was more like a ghost town, because all your mates had joined the forces, so there was hardly anyone about. If you went for a drink in the club or a pub, it seemed that all there was there was old men. Well, old men then, of course, that'd be middle-aged men over 40, that wasn't in the forces. Well, they appeared to us to be old men, and that's how it seemed, with the exception of perhaps a few here and there that had not joined the forces and wouldn't join. Well, of course, you didn't want their company, and that's how it worked out. Well, now, the bright spot of all was my old mate, Sid Carroll. He'd had quite a number of operations, and he'd come through them very well, and he'd finished with the army, and they found him a job in the office in the railway works, which he settled down to. Well, incidentally, he finished the whole of his life there in that office. Well, that was beautiful then for him and I to get together again. And we used to go about at night when he finished work and have a drink here and there, and we really enjoyed ourselves. Well, when that leave finished, I had to report back then to the headquarters, which was at Aylesbury. Well, from there, I was sent to Oy Wycombe, where there was a camp. Now, at that time of day, there used to be what they call sponsored regiments. I don't know who sponsored them in the north of England, but there were several, and they were sponsored, but because they really was a proper regiment, but they sponsored a proportion and so called themselves that regiment, which they joined eventually. Well, now what I'm trying to get at, that applied here in Buckinghamshire, and there was a camp set up in the park at Oy Wycombe, and there was all tents. Now that was sponsored by the wealthy people of Buckinghamshire, and they called it, nicknamed it, the Jewish Battalion, which it was mainly, and it was sponsored by Lord Rosebery, Lord Rothschild, and millionaire banker from Bletchley, the Leon family. They was all Jewish millionaires, and they sponsored this so-called regiment. Well, it was really boiled down to reinforce the 1st Bucks Territorial Battalion in France. Now, there was a matter of 200 or 300 there, and when I was sent there, the tents was all up, and there would be, as I say, roughly about perhaps 200 there then, but there was one tent especially put on one side, which they call the Expeditionary Force Tent. Now, that was for those who had come home wounded from hospital and, like myself, reported back. Well, there was about a dozen or so of us in that particular tent, and we'd done no training whatever. We was let off for training, but the food, it was magnificent. We were well fed. Everything we wanted, it was there for us. And us being Expeditionary Force wounded, had pretty well everything we liked to ask for. Practically the whole of the troops there was recruited from London. That was nearly all of them Jewish chaps, and also prominent London sporting people. They were mainly from Petticoat Lane, but the sporting people there was prominent national boxers. One of the main ones I can mention was Jim Sullivan, then the middleweight champion of England. There was him and several of the others, and it was the whole of his boxing school that had joined up entirely. And they was all there. Well, in the middle of the camp, they fixed up a boxing ring. And so they used to have that for training. And on Sundays, they used to have a band there. The band played. They formed an own band. And they used to allow the public to come in on a Sunday, of a Sunday afternoon, and there used to be competitions and boxing matches every Sunday for the public to come and see.
On the tape last was the bit when you joined the what was called the Jewish Battalion.
Oh.
And you were talking about the fact that they used to have open days, didn't they?
Yeah.
And Jim Sullivan.
Yes, right.
The boxer was.
Yeah.
Was joined. What were your memories of him? Did he? Was he just an ordinary champion?
Now, if I'd I got to? Had I got to when I finished?
No, you'd only got to the fact that they used to have open days when they used to have boxing competitions.
And I didn't go beyond that.
No.
And then. Did I tell you about... I told you about the hut, the cat of the tent, with... what's her name in? Us Expeditionary Force. Didn't I? Now, are you ready then?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Go on then. Well, now, what actually happened then was this expeditionary force, we were the wounded back from the 1st Battalion at the front, and as the wounded came out of hospital, they were sent there, and in that camp was a newly formed, I think I told you, newly formed... battalion, which was done to reinforce the 1st Battalion mainly at that time. Well, now us in that tent, we'd done no parades at all. And in the middle of the camp, there was a camp with tents all around, in the centre, there was this boxing ring. Now, practically the whole of the young troops, recruits there, came from the London area, see, and they was mainly Jew boys, Jewish, you see, because it was sponsored by people like Lord Rothschild and different ones like that, you know, and because they was all recruited from London, sporting, mainly sporting crowd, but the main part of the sporting crowd was the London boxing clubs mainly, and Jim Sullivan at that time, of course, was well known. He fought George Escarpentier, Madison Square Gardens, and all that sort of thing. Anyway, he was there, and one or two more of the very, very prominent boxers at that time. Well, now, when they was out on parade in the afternoons, we used to lay in the tent while the others went out on parade, bits of marches and so forth. Well, in the tent, there was two specially in the tent. Oh, Cherry Hill and Charlie Watson. They were the two principal ones I'm thinking of. And one of them, they were both college chaps. One was an architect, being trained for it, architect, and the other one, Cherry Hill, was an auctioneer. They were both well-to-do and college people. Well, anyhow, this particular afternoon, we was laying in the tent and it was hot, and our Cherry, he was a real lad, you know, typical happy-go-lucky English chap, and he said, will any of you come and have a spar with me? You know, proper top-notcher, nice chap. And we said, keep quiet. I said, shut up, Cherry, lay still, keep quiet. No, come on, he says, one of you, he said. So I said, shut up. So Cherry went to go out the tent and he stepped right on my shin. I said, oh, blimey, Cherry. I said, all right, I said, I'll come and have a do if you like. So he says, that's all right. He says, I won't hurt you a bit. He says, I won't hurt you. I says, that's all right. Hey, well, I'd been training years as a, you know. And when we went out, because the camp was absolutely empty. Camp was empty, complete. And there was only him and I there, and he went across to the police tent. And in the police tent was the bloke that managed all these boxers, and he was a policeman there then, and he went and got a set of gloves. And me and our Cherry went in the ring, and, oh, blimey, our Cherry said he was champion of his college. And I thought, all right. It didn't take long to find out. I got Cherry where I wanted him. And After a little while, his nose began to bleed, his lips were cut, and we was only playing, not hitting hard. And old Cherry says, "Bugger you," he said, "you're a pro." I said, "No, no, no." So anyway, he packed up and we went down. There was a long trough at the bottom of the field of the park, all running water. We stripped out having to wash there, and some bloke kind of tapped me on the shoulder. He said, "What's your name?" I said, "Corporal Mundy." "No," he said, "what's your name?" I said, "I told you, Corporal Mundy." "All right," he said, "well, what name do you use in the ring?" I said, "None at all." So he said, "Well," he said, "will you join our team?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "Yeah, all right, I will." And that's how it all began. That's how I got in that team and trained with them and carried on with them. And then the artillery and all that was farther along the park. Every Sunday, you see, they used to have the band in and let the civilians in the park. And there was artillery crowd and air crowd and the band playing and the civilians and all that coming in. So naturally, made a nice afternoon. There was boxing every afternoon, every Sunday.
Carry on.
It went on from that until these artillery people, they used to sometimes bring boxers in, you know. It was an exhibition mostly. And this particular time they come in and they said wanted to put up for the welterweight championship of the Southern Command, see? So these people, like Jim Sullivan and them, well, they weren't going to waste their time on that sort of thing. And so Jim said to me, "Will you take him?" I said, "Yeah, all right, I will." And I did do, and that's how it come about. I won that so-called championship. Well, now, after that, there was all sorts of things happened after that. Oh, blimey. I got put on the police from that. Old Colonel sent for me and put me on the police. And, oh, I'll talk about a game on that. And I could tell you a lot of tales.
Well, tell me a bit about the... this was the military police, was it?
Oh, military police, yeah.
What were your duties for that then?
Oh, well, you had to go around and see everybody was in camp, be it 10 o'clock or half past 10, whatever it was at night. See as the town was clear. See as all the pubs was empty. Any trouble in pubs? Oh, the military police, oh, blimey, that was a big job. Mm. Yes, you had to... the military police used to have to go all round High Wycombe, see? You used to go to all the pubs, see? Go to the pubs and see as there was no trouble. And when they turned out the pubs, well, before they closed in time, they had to be back in camp. Well, then you couldn't get in camp very well, you see, without going by the guard at the gate. But they had to be. But if there was any trouble in a public house, well, these publicans... they used to like to see us, because if there was a lot of trouble in a pub, you see, they had the licence took away. That meant that they'd had it then as far as custom was concerned.